or an alternative to the loop algebra of the Q quantum gravity. We have parallel sessions, as you know well, and you might be anxious to get to Florian's talk. I am, but I may not make it. So I thought I would answer the question for you all first, and then you can decide if you actually want to see the details. Okay, so the answer is essentially no. The essentially part is that in the limit of zero cosmological constant, you might get approximate solutions of this deformation. But I'll explain what all that is in a moment. Okay, so we'll wait a moment. Oh, great. Okay, so how does all this technology work? One. The right one. Two. Excellent. That was perfect. Okay, good. Great. So I will remind you about a few facts and perhaps miracles. The first of which is the Ashgar formulation of general relativity, and this is somewhat different than you might have seen earlier today. This is all with complex variables. Okay. So I just want to remind you of this setting. We have two canonical variables that we've been seeing over and over. We have a list of constraints, which we've been seeing over and over, the sort of simplest things that you could write down given the variables. I've, of course, added a cosmological constant here because that will be critical for the following work. I'll make a few little notes. The most important of which for this talk is that you can solve this Hamiltonian constraint with a electric-magnetic duality like this. And also, critically, we're going to need to remind ourselves on occasion that to recover general relativity, we need to use reality conditions. That is to say, what we really want at the end of the day is a metric and its time evolution to be real. Now, there's various ways to implement that, but I won't get into those details. I'll just refer to them in a little while when talking about certain formula involving a connection. Okay, so that's the setting. What I'd like to do and spend the rest of the time talking about is quantum theory. Now, I think what we're going to need to do, because I'll be talking about heuristics, is to don some rose-colored glasses here for a little while. What I'll be doing is talking about heuristics, and I want to paint a beautiful, wonderful picture, unmarred by important technical details, which we'll have to get to eventually. But for the moment, what I'd like to do is just talk about what we might see in the big picture. So in the connection representation, you can implement E as a good old momentum operator. It's just the functional derivative with respect to A. We're going to promote the Poisson algebra or Poisson bracket to a commutator in the usual way. And you get this relation. The only thing I'd like you to note is that the factors of I are a little bit different than you might expect due to the complex nature of the variables. Okay, moving right along, what we are looking for are wave functions, functionals of A, such that the constraints are all satisfied. Now, I've chosen a particular popular, it's not mine, of course, but a particular popular ordering for these derivatives, which will become obvious in a moment, but I also want to add that it's very nice in the sense that it doesn't muck up the algebra. The algebra is still what you would want. Okay, so the obvious question is, okay, can we find a solution? And sure enough, at least Kodama has told us how to do that. And so what does that look like? Okay, so if you take the Chern-Simons form like so, you write a state like this where you have a normalization, which might depend on topology, and then you exponentiate the Chern-Simons form, then you get something that actually satisfies the Hamiltonian constraint. And this is due to this handy little fact that if you just differentiate the Chern-Simons form, you get essentially the magnetic field. Now, if you just... I want to go backwards, not forwards. What this does is conveniently turn this into essentially a term that is F or minus F, so that part just dies away. And you get a solution to the Hamiltonian constraint. Incidentally, you can also just compute or just notice that these other constraints are also satisfied. So that's good. So this looks like a state. Okay? This is a nice state for quantum gravity. Now, I'd like to... push this a little further and say, well, what about the loop transform? Let's describe this in terms of observables that are relevant for the theory, so Wilson loops or in generally spin networks. So let's just try and see what happens. What we'd like to do is take the transformation of this. So what we need is some little measure here. Oh, well, that might be complicated. We need a observable, say, a spin network, which I've just written here, and then we need our state. So we want to find the actual transform of that state. We want to figure out what that little beast is. Okay? All right. So this is your homework problem, okay? But you have some hints. So Witten showed that if you look at this theory written in this fashion, in particular, look at Wilson loops over links or knots in links. Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Lee. What you get is something that's very nice. This is an invariant, the Kaufman bracket. Okay. Now, one nice little piece to this, this sort of extra feature which Witten point out, and I'm sure this is why we have these bags here. So what happens is instead of the dependence being on just spinoric edges, they actually depend on some sort of thickened edges, so you can imagine as like a ribbon. So in fact, the dependence depends on how much twisting occurs in the spin network edges. And this is a sensitivity that is picked up by the details of how this path integral is defined. Okay, so this is known as framing. Perhaps the nicest way to think about it is tubes that are marked with stripes, or you can think about it as ribbons. Okay, so you have spin networks, but I should be cautious here. Of course, Witten's result was for links and knots. But you have spin networks which have a sensitivity to the twisting on the edges. Okay? All right, so continuing with this rose-colored glass picture, we have the following wonderful thing. We have a state of quantum gravity, maybe even multiple states of quantum gravity. We've done it. It includes the cosmological constant, which is very nice in this late time of the universe. And we have, in fact, quantum numbers for the states. We know what they are. They're the Kaufman bracket for spin networks. Okay? And it has de Sitter as the semi-classical limit. Furthermore, let me remind you a little something about the Sherman-Simons theory of the fractional quantum Hall effect. The framing in that theory, if you look at the same kind of observables in that theory, actually determine the composite particle statistics. It's getting rosier every moment. That framing dependence actually depends on the cosmological constant, in fact, the constant that occurs in the Kodama state. So we are looking at a possible particle statistics cosmological constant connection. Okay, and as I point out, that this depends on frame spin networks. Okay, so of course, if this really held, perhaps this whole conference would be just on this. Okay, so let's slip off the glasses for a moment and see where we might have some difficulties. Okay? So let me point out a few. So one of them is, well, Witten worked with Yang-Mills theory. Okay, this is a very different situation. The connections were not complex. Okay, so if you were just to take a much more trivial example, if you were busy as a student computing Laplace transforms and you wanted to figure out what the inverse Laplace transform is, you wouldn't perhaps immediately write down the Bronwich integral. You might have to think a little while to figure out what the contour is for that integral. And in fact, that's what we have to do here if we're going to actually take seriously this picture. Furthermore, there's been some questions about whether the state is normalizable. So let me refer to you some work by Laurent and Lee. They showed in a linearized case that it's delta function normalizable for the Euclidean case, but not normalizable for the linearized Lorentzian case. Okay? This state also violates CPT, highly relevant for the framework of perturbative quantum field theory. I'm not sure exactly how it'll fit in for the non-perturbative framework. Also, another little bit that isn't so often mentioned is that if you actually use something called the variational calculus, which means you sort of move these little spin networks with respect to each other around intersections, you discover that this invariant, this Kaufman invariant, actually acquires a tangent space sensitivity. That is to say, there's embedding information that's picked up in there. Okay, so let me make a few notes on the Euclidean results, because that's where I'm going to focus my attention for the rest of this talk. Due to the invariance in a large gauge transformation, I haven't mentioned that up to now, but I will now, K is an integer. Okay, so let's play with this a little bit. So if you were to look at the coefficient that Witten used and then compare that to what you need for the Kodama states for the Euclidean case, you discover that this integer is, in fact, related to 1 over the dimensionless cosmological constant. Okay, so we have a sort of curious little feature with that there's the cosmological constant is related to an integer. And I also want to note something that will become critical at the end of the talk. If the cosmological constant is small as compared with the Planck length squared, right, so that's significantly suppressed. So if the cosmological constant is small, then we have a large K. The sensitivity to the twist on the edges is can be sort of seen as a dependence on Q, the deformation parameter, sort of a measure of twist, and it's related I kind of like the red light. Okay, it's related to K this way, okay? And this is for SU2. The Kaufman bracket can be expressed in a bunch of different ways as a polynomial in Q or as some expression of quantum integers. We're going to see these again before the end of the talk. Or if you like, as the evaluation of quantum spin networks using graphical recoupling theory. Okay. So, oops. That's interesting. Okay. We seem to have a left-right inversion. Okay, so here's the question I want to pose. So suppose you actually want to directly define the loop, basic loop algebra of loop quantum gravity and kinematic observables in terms of quantum spin networks. So can you do this? Okay, so some time ago, in fact, almost exactly 10 years ago, we looked at this, and the answer is yes. So if you take this loop algebra like so, and be careful about the definition of what these Q-deformed loop operators are. This, for those who aren't familiar with this old notation, this is essentially just a Wilson loop, and this is the Wilson loop with a one of these electric fields inserted. Okay. So you get this kind of thing. So this talk, really what I'd like to do is focus on the combinatorics of quantum spin networks and the consistency with loop algebra. So what I'm going to do is strip out everything having to do with the embedding and so forth, and just introduce two operators. This thing here is just the Wilson loop itself, the T. This is what we might call the T1 here. Okay. So these are the operators that I'll be dealing with, and this algebra here becomes this one here. Okay. All right. So what I'd like to pose is, this is something that we investigated before, but it looks like a choice. Maybe there's other choices. In particular, you might imagine you might play with this choice here. Okay. So guess what I'm asking here. Are there other choices for this algebra or the action of T, say a quantum integer itself, not just an integer, and maybe, heck, maybe different use of roots of unity or more general deformation parameters if we have to analytically continue or something else? Is there a more general definition? Or deformation. So I'm going to try using this, a deformation of the algebra itself, with lambda, the deformation, an additional deformation parameter which depends on Q, and I'll take the action of this T to be some arbitrary thing to be determined, Tn, and then I'm not modifying this basic loop relation. Okay, so once again, what am I doing? I'm trying to implement the loop algebra directly in terms of quantum spin networks. And I want to ask, is the choice, do I have a lot of choice in this? Okay, and so once again, I'll show or argue that the answer is no. Okay, so what I'm going to do here for the sake of this talk is produce an argument that's based on a state here. And so what are these states? I guess I didn't mention that. That's unfortunate. Here we are. So these states, what I'm dealing with, are quantum spin networks, where this is the label or representation, or sometimes called color, on the loop alpha, and this one is the color on the loop beta. Okay? So just a sort of simple example of a state here. Okay, so I'm going to try to apply this algebra with a general deformation parameter lambda and Tn and just see what I can find. Okay, so the first term of this is quite simple. It's just this. The others is useful to use graphical methods. So I'll just sort of flash a calculation just for fun. Remember old times and those kinds of things. And so if you look at what happens when you apply this operator, so just adding a loop essentially to this state, then it's useful to consider this piece of recoupling. Oh, dear. So what that is simply the following thing. This is just proportional to a trivalent vertex. This is the proportionality constant. You can simplify it. You get this. These are all in terms of quantum deformed SU2, so or temporary Lieb recoupling theory. And what you find is that the action of that operator on that state is simply given by these two things. So there's two terms, one with n plus 1 and one with n minus 1. Okay, so that's what you do. There's a few different terms like this. So it turns out that the application of the algebra, the application of the algebra looks like this. This might be a little hard to digest. Just by itself. So there's actually two different independent states there, so you have two recursion relations. So it just all comes down to two recursion relations. The first is essentially trivial. You get this, which actually looks an awful lot like a quantum integer, actually. A quantum integer in terms of lambda. And so what you might then ask is what happens to the second, but let me make one little comment here, which I should make, and that is that you notice that we need these things to be true or to hold for values of n, that's the label on the state, up to some finite level. That's because we're working with a root of unity, so that we have a cap on the number of dimensions, cap on the number of representations, as is usual for the Q2-form case. Okay, so what you then do is just simply use that first relation that was on the bottom of the last slide and plug into the second recursion relation, and you get this. So the question that I asked before, is there an alternative to the standard case for the loop algebra, just comes down to this. Does there exist a lambda for any value for k, that's the parameter that's related to the cosmological constant, for all n's that are relevant, that is to say in all the colors that are relevant. Okay, so you can work this out looking at a case-by-case basis. I won't go through the details, but the answer is, nope. There are different possible, of course, this is a polynomial, right? So there's different possible roots of that polynomial, but what you'd like is the roots would be shared by different values of n, and that doesn't hold. Okay, however, it does hold in the limit where k is quite large, so that's the small cosmological constant. And in that particular case, the relation is exact. Okay. Furthermore, for large k's, and then this is to arbitrary accurate approximation, you can get the solution that lambda is equal to 1 and tn is equal to n, okay, as long as n isn't particularly large. Okay, so let me put this in context for just a quick moment. So if you have some sort of stage-like inflation, then your k is maybe something like this, so quite large. Okay, so as it turns out, what this implies is that your roots for this polynomial, for lambda, this deformation parameter, only differ by a part in 10 to the 14 for from 2 to 100. Okay, so I just point out that there are these approximate solutions, but if you really want this thing to be exactly solved, then the only choice is for essentially the limit of zero cosmological constant. Okay, so let me say a few summaries, and next I'll give some little references. So on the question of the possible deformation, so it looks like, no, there's not a possible deformation for loop algebra that's consistent with the combinatorics of quantum spin networks. Notice this is a very limited question that I'm asking. I'm just asking whether that there, with the combinatorics of quantum spin networks, of SU2 spin networks in particular, do we have other possible representations of this loop algebra? So it looks like no. And I'm asking this limited question simply because in the early days of this subject, when we were looking at these things, that we just noticed that there was a choice, and perhaps there'd be other possible choices. And so this is just closing that open question. Okay. I also point out there are approximate solutions. I want to make one little note about this case, Lorentzian case. So remember, in the beautiful picture that we had, what we really wanted was a path integral for complex connections. Okay, so if it indeed is the case that we just need to define a contour in that space, and we need to just simply analytically continue k, then this question is easy to answer in that particular setting. I don't know if that's going to be necessarily what we end up having to do, but it's easy to answer in that setting. And the when k is complex, this does not affect the solutions, at least as far as I can tell. So the qualitative nature of the problem just doesn't change at all. Okay, so that's to say, we don't have roots of that polynomial that are the same for all n. That's what we need. Let me also point out a couple of other little things. One is that what this means in particular for Q quantum gravity is that we don't have a quantum observable in that context where the area would be equal to this, which would be something, well, it's a sort of familiar Casimir for the quantum group where you have, this is sort of like the JJ plus 2 that you normally see just written in terms of color and in terms of quantum integers. So that does not appear to be consistent with the loop algebra and the quantum spin network combinatorics. Okay. The other thing, of course, is the big picture. The big picture is not so much about this loop algebra, but what we really need to do is to define this loop transform, redo Witten, if you will, with the complex variables that Ashkar proposed. In terms of this integral, what we need to do is essentially look at a contour. Now, there's been some nice results. This is just the latest of a series of papers here on looking at this transform into triad representation. So they actually make some headway in there, and there's some interesting ideas that they have. So it might be a place to start. Okay, so I'll just finish with this. There's a few references that introduce the subject, Lee's review of a few years ago, and then these are the papers that are in Q quantum gravity. So thank you very much.
Yeah. So you try to form just one definition of the operator action of the other one.
There was two deformations of the algebra and the T1, right? But we didn't do the T0.
Right.
Yep.
Do you think we can do it all?
From work we did quite a while ago, I think not. But this does not, I didn't deform it in this argument here. It's also very nice, that a simple addition subtraction of color, of course, is a very nice natural definition this for the T0. Yes.
So since you're a bicycle, forget it. You say last.
Well, I think the sort of ideal thing would be to work on this, right? What is the actual loop transform that we're interested in? Right. This would be absolutely delightful, and then we could actually look at these things from sort of a more first principles point of view. The reason why this is sort of nice is that it points to the fact that we need to look for something that's going to be a little bit different than we've been looking at before in this context of the kinematics of Q deformed spin networks. Great.